Orale!
Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is Jorge Martin and Familia. We're on YouTube, mate. Please give us a like and subscribe because we are bringing you the content you want, the content you need, the NFL Insider Series. It is still caliente. We are still bringing it. We're bringing you some of the best minds who are covering the teams that you want to know about, so that we can get down to the fantasy implications for each one of those teams to help you win your fantasy football leagues, win your drafts, get the bragging rights, get going on that. And so, Familia, we're starting off. We got, before we get into our invitado, because we are going to the East Coast, we're going to delay it for just 1 second because we want to talk about the Fantasy Point. We're a proud member of the Fantasy Points Media Group. Please, when you go to fantasypoints.com, you get some of the greatest fantasy minds. John Hansen, Joe Dolan, who had our invitado on recently. We got Graham Barfield, Scott Barrett, Tom Brawley, Wes Huber. Everybody's bringing so much great content, leading up to the training camp to get you ready for your fantasy football drafts. I pick these guys' minds all the time, use the content to help you win your league. So, and we're going to jump into one right now because I tell you, this is someone I heard with Joe Dolan recently, and I'm so glad that he accepted my invite to come on. Michael Nania. Oh, my paisan, mi amigo. I love having you on. This is great. He is one of the co-owners of Jets X Factor, and you know, they create Jets specific content. They're credentialed. They're in the clubhouses, locker rooms. I was thinking baseball there for a second. They're on the practice field. They're at the games. They're in there. They're creating content to get, you know, to give you the best of the best from the Jets. And Michael, welcome. Bienvenido. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad you appreciated my appearance over there. It's awesome to be here.
And you know what? You brought some so much great analysis right off the bat, and I just want to jump into it. Oh, first off, I give a quick shout out to those people. Make sure you're following Michael on Twitter, Michael_Nania. I got that right?
Yeah,
and Jets X Factor, the YouTube channel, and their podcast. So make sure you're keeping an eye on that. But let's start with Zach Wilson, the number two pick in the 2021 draft. Just so much expectations. There was the talk of the Patrick Mahomes comparisons, the Aaron Rodgers comparisons. The season did not play out the way I wanted to. Obviously, there are a lot of factors. He got injured. His quarterback coach unfortunately passed away before the season. Going into 2022, this is the year of growth, where if a player is going to take that progression to be great, it happens. A big step forward comes in second year. So much talk about bulking up. This is a guy who's, you know, people have wanted a great franchise quarterback for the Jets, probably since Joe Namath, at the very least. What growth can we expect? Are we looking for from what you've been able to see? Where has he looked better that could be translated into the 2022 season?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing with Wilson this year is to keep the expectations fairly measured. They're high, but they're also not high to the point where you're expecting this year to be his ceiling. Because, you know, frankly, the way he played in his rookie season and his production, not a lot of guys have come back from that to be successful. Just the percentage of quarterbacks who've had rookie seasons of his caliber, the odds aren't great. And they're not great for any rookie quarterback, even if you do start out well. But to struggle as much as he did at times last year definitely would make him an outlier if he did become successful. But it is possible. And one of the best examples is a guy in his own division who he's going to play twice a year in Josh Allen. And I think they're much different prospects. You know, obviously just different players had different issues in their rookie seasons, different strengths. But the trajectory of Allen's career is, I think, what Jets fans and the Jets as an organization are looking for Wilson to follow. And that's, you know, year one, both guys struggled a lot. They have very similar rookie year numbers in terms of passer rating, touchdowns, all those things. But then year two, Allen comes out and he wasn't yet the Josh Allen that we know him as now, but he was more, a little bit more stable, more confident, helped them win 10 games, get to the playoffs. His accuracy was less erratic. Again, still not as sharp as it is now, but he was a decent quarterback in his second year who you could win games with. And I think that that's what the Jets want Wilson to be this year. They've improved their offensive line, bolstered running back, bolstered tight end. So they can really run the football now. Defensively, they've improved the secondary. They got a pass rush that they think can make a lot of big plays for them, create good field position, create short drives for the defense. So they do have a lot of pieces to complement him this year, and I think they want him to be a guy who they could win games with, generate some momentum, allow him to have these situations where he could, you know, put together long drives where he's not necessarily making the hugest plays or carrying the team quite yet, but is just executing the offense, you know, completing higher percentage of his passes, continuing also protecting the ball better like he did near the end of last season. He didn't throw an interception in his final five games. So that was a big piece of the progress that he showed down the stretch last year. And I think that's definitely the main thing they want to see him carry over. So expectations are high. He needs to take a substantial leap and really show tangible progress that gives you the confidence to where, even if he isn't a star right now, that he's trending in that direction going forward. So to do that, I don't think he has to be a top 10 guy, maybe not even top 15, but if he could be a middle of the pack quarterback who doesn't lose you games, who executes the offense, and allows you to have a winning program. And again, that doesn't even mean playoffs for this team this year. It could be 7 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins, somewhere around there. And just be that winning, stable quarterback who could lead the offense, shows progress, substantial progress compared to last year. Then I think he'll be on the right track towards taking that year three leap to maybe being an upper echelon quarterback.
So as far as he's concerned, you know, a lot of people are playing super flex leagues, two quarterback leagues where you're starting that. You know, he's not ranked as the top among the top quarterbacks and the top top 12 quarterbacks, which would be for in a 12 team league as far as starters. I'm looking at ADP from Fantasy Pros, and he's number 24. So he would be still among the starters for being the second quarterback. When it comes down to him, I mean, could he just kind of take some steps up a little bit, or is that maybe asking a lot considering how far he has to come, how far he's coming from last year?
Yeah, I would definitely keep expectations tempered right now because, you know, the floor, at least from a fantasy perspective, is so low based on what we saw last year. I mean, you know, as optimistic as we are, still only had 9 passing touchdowns in 13 games last year. So it's – and he had games where he'd under 200 yards, a lot of games under 200 yards. So the floor is low, and I think you have to be realistic about that for now. But, you know, the ceiling is high. So I think, you know, after a few games pass – and he's going to be tested early with some of the opponents the Jets have at the beginning of their schedule. The whole AFC North to start things out, Ravens, Browns, Steelers, and Bengals. Ravens, Browns, Bengals, and Steelers in that order. So he's going to be tested right away, and I think we'll quickly get a feel for what kind of quarterback you're getting this year from a production perspective, because last season he really struggled to put up numbers because, you know, the passing touchdowns, they were just struggling so much to move the ball that they couldn't get in the red zone to where he could, you know, get those red zone touchdown passes, which is where most of them come from. And then he also couldn't get too many deep touchdowns because his receivers had a lot of injuries and their top deep separators, Corey Davis, Elijah Moore, were out for most of the season. So he couldn't get those big plays either. And then defensively, they were the last ranked defense, so they couldn't get off the field. They couldn't take the ball away, create good field position. So, both his fault and the team's fault, there were a lot of things going against him fantasy-wise to put up those big numbers, have a high volume of pass attempts, you know, putting up yards efficiently with big plays, getting in the red zone to get those touchdowns. There were a lot of things that just weren't clicking for him to get those opportunities to put up numbers, both his fault and the team. So I think we'll quickly get a chance to see, you know, can he complete passes more efficiently? Can he get more big chunk gains through the air? Can they get to the red zone more often so he can get those opportunities to throw maybe a touchdown or two per week instead of having, you know, these long streaks without any touchdowns like he had last year? So we'll get a feel for the type of quarterback he's going to be from a production perspective.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out the kind of really the crucible that he's got right off the bat. I mean, that first month, that September into October, the first 4 weeks are just, that's a murderer's row, man. You wearing the Yankee shirt, you know very well the murderer's row. When we're talking about the wide receivers, there's so much excitement about Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson coming into the league. I know that when it comes to rookie wide receivers, it could be kind of rough at the beginning, but so many people had Garrett Wilson as their top receiver coming out of the draft. They're both, you know, are they similar or different enough that they could be seeing different kind of targets, different, you know, playing different positions and complement one another to be, to become both viable from a fantasy standpoint?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an opportunity for them to both get a very similar diet of targets throughout the season because they're both very complementary players. I mean, even though Elijah Moore is a smaller receiver at, I think, about 5'9", he's on the smaller side. He can play outside. That's where he did most of his damage last year. He can get off the line of scrimmage. He can beat press, even though he's small. So he can play all different roles. Garrett Wilson can do the same thing. And that definitely gives them the ability to play together, to share targets, and to exchange games where, you know, maybe Moore has a better matchup in this game. Maybe next game is Garrett Wilson. So I think there is that potential for both of them to have a lot of production this year. But I do lean towards Elijah Moore being the favorite this season because of the chemistry he already established with Wilson last year and the way that he finished, Elijah Moore finished last season before his season-ending injury. His last six games, I believe he was a top five or so producer at the wide receiver position. He was scoring touchdowns. He was getting a high volume of targets. Especially the most impressive thing with him statistically was what he was doing in terms of his targets per route, because the Jets obviously didn't run a lot of offensive plays because they couldn't sustain drives. The defense couldn't get off the field. The quarterbacks, all of the quarterbacks, were struggling. So they didn't run a lot of plays, but Elijah Moore, with the reps he was getting, was separating at such a consistent level, you know, winning his routes, beating his defenders, to where he was getting really good target volume for the playing time that he was getting. And he also wasn't playing the highest percentage of snaps either for some of those late season games, which was a very odd thing for the Jets coaching staff, but he was playing about 50 to 60% of the snaps in some games before they started pushing him back up towards the 80% mark. But yeah, Elijah Moore was separating at a great level last season. And first few games, his production wasn't good, but it wasn't his fault. He was very consistently winning matchups and he was getting overthrown. The quarterback was getting sacked before he could throw in the ball. But those opportunities were always there from the beginning of the season. And then, you know, final 6 weeks, some of the other quarterbacks come in, Josh Johnson, Mike White, Joe Flacco, and those guys found him a little bit better than Zach Wilson was at the beginning of the year. Then when Zach Wilson did come back for a couple games with Elijah Moore, he was finding him more consistently as well, sort of picking up where the veterans left off with unlocking Elijah Moore. So the ceiling he showed last season was very high. He built some chemistry with Zach Wilson. I lean towards Elijah Moore over Garrett Wilson right now, but they both definitely have the complementary skill sets to play together and both be featured in this passing game.
Is Corey Davis more of a kind of like a waiver wire pick, someone to keep an eye on, check on the matchup, and also to see how Zach Wilson's progression has gone?
Yeah, Corey Davis is an interesting wild card in all of it because, you know, he was the clear-cut number one last season. In preseason, he was getting a ton of targets. And then early in the season, he was clearly Zach Wilson's favorite target and to a fault because Wilson threw a lot of interceptions targeting Davis early in the season, especially in that Patriots game in week two. The first two of those four interceptions were in Davis's direction. So Wilson was kind of forcing him the ball early. And Davis did have a tough season in terms of drops compared to his career averages. But if he can get back to, because he wasn't a high drop guy before last year, he's had good hands throughout his career. He's been a never too high of a target volume guy, but a big yards per reception guy. And he did have the chunk gains and the yak last year. The target volume was good when he was the number one option. It was just the drops that were really killing him. So if he can get back to that career average, his previous career average in terms of drops, he can be a solid player this year. So it will be interesting to see how the targets kind of get distributed between these three receivers. They are all fairly complementary players who can play different roles. You have two highly drafted young players with a high potential. And then you have Davis, who's the veteran of the group. And, you know, in 2020 with the Titans, showed a really solid ceiling to be that a good number two guy next to AJ Brown. So maybe Davis is that number two next to Moore this year. And then Garrett Wilson kind of eases in as that third option. That's a possibility. So it will be interesting to see how Corey Davis slides in now that he has some pretty heavy competition that he didn't quite have last year. Now that Elijah Moore has proven himself, or to an extent, in his rookie season, and Garrett Wilson is in here, because last year was Corey Davis. It was clear he was going to be the number one guy and Zach Wilson's favorite, but now he's got some competition. So we'll see how he slides in.
It is interesting. I mean, fantasy players, a lot of times they're not very patient when it comes to young players. They want to see those guys come in and just be studs right off the bat. And especially on, you know, when you talk about receivers, they can come in and take a while, take maybe half a season, maybe a full season. You know, and the Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson have very much kind of like screwed us, you know, kind of screwed with our minds and made us think that this is that easy. It's not. The season, rookie seasons end up a lot of times the way Elijah Moore's did. So with some flashes, maybe a good finish. So yeah, I think I love the way you kind of broke it down. But speaking of flashes, I think people are very much expecting Breece Hall to flash this season. He's going the 3-4 range. I just picked him in a best ball league in the best ball draft in the fourth round. And I would just did a little bit of a touchdown dance right there because I was so excited to get him at that point. You know, he was the consensus number one pick among draft analysts. People, you know, found very few flaws in his game, but from a pure production standpoint, could we be looking at kind of like, it always seems like there's at least one guy to come up and take the mantle right off the bat, you know, if not right off the bat, fairly soon. Najee Harris last year in Pittsburgh, the year before was Jonathan Taylor. I'm nominating Breece Hall as this year's guy. Am I crazy or am I loco, or are you with me on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good possibility for it. The big X factor in all of it is Michael Carter, who himself had a very solid rookie season. He almost hit 1,000 scrimmage yards despite missing a few games. He was a good two-way threat, catching the ball and rushing it. He broke a lot of tackles. So running back wasn't seen as a need with the way that Carter was playing. But the Jets kind of showed their commitment to running the ball, to supporting Zach Wilson with selecting Breece Hall. And it will be interesting to see how the carries get divided up, because this is a, you know, San Francisco based coaching staff with Michael LaFleur as the offensive coordinator, Robert Saleh as the head coach. And they come from the 49ers, where they, for the past few years under Kyle Shanahan and continue to do right now, have run a committee backfield. They never really had the guy in that backfield. It's always, you know, been a split with guys like Raheem Mostert, Matt Breida through the years, now Elijah Mitchell, and various other players they've had. So that sort of seems like the direction they're going. It's kind of what they wanted to do last year with Tevin Coleman, Michael Carter, and Ty Johnson. Carter kind of took the mantle by the end of the year, but they still were giving some touches to Tevin Coleman and Ty Johnson. So it will be very interesting to see how these guys split it up. Is it going to be 50-50 to start? Is it going to eventually be a 70-30 to whoever sort of stands out more? But I do lean towards Hall because, you know, they invested a lot in this guy to trade up. It wasn't a big trade up, only fifth round pick to go two spots. But a high second round pick is in today's day and age already very high for a running back. So to do that and trade up, it's definitely a premium investment. So that definitely gives credence to the idea that they're going to lean towards him and give him chances to be the guy. And Carter's always going to be there and get his touches, but I think Breece Hall has enough explosion and home run hitting ability to get those big plays and that efficiency in terms of yards per carry, even if he doesn't get the greatest workload every single week. He also should contribute in the passing game, so that helps his value as well. And then in the red zone, I think he has a size advantage over Carter, so that could give him the edge in terms of goal line carries. Although Carter is a good power back, despite his lack of size. But I would think Hall kind of gets the edge there. So it's still unknown how these carries are going to be split up. But at the least, I think Hall should be getting 50-50. And then, you know, if he can transition well and show them three-down ability, pass blocking, ability to catch the ball, then he should sort of take the advantage, I think, to at least a 60-40 level, maybe a 70-30 over Carter. But the bottom line is he has the explosiveness and just the top-end traits to make the most of however many touches he does get. We just have to wait and see what the split is going to be between these two guys.
So we talked about this being a Shanahan offense, and obviously, you mentioned it, yards after the catch is a big part. Can both of these running backs become a big factor in the passing game?
I think they both definitely have the potential to. Like I mentioned with Carter, he had a big year in the passing game last season. In terms of his receiving ability, he didn't have a ton of downfield catches, but there were parts of the year where he was getting a very high volume of targets as a check down option, as a safety blanket. The thing that in terms of Carter's receiving upside is a little bit concerning going forward is he got a lot of those targets with Mike White in the lineup. The couple games that Mike White was in there, Carter was eating up a ton of targets and catches. And his production in the passing game wasn't as good when Zach Wilson was in there or any other quarterback. So that does kind of lay a hit in terms of projecting how his 2020 or 2021 receiving numbers project to 2022. But he definitely showed, you know, just the elusiveness after the catch to definitely encourage the Jets to feature him in the passing game. But Breece Hall is definitely going to be a factor in the passing game. I think he kind of offers similar ability in terms of having reliable hands as a check down option, being able to make plays after the catch as a safety blanket. But I think Hall also offers a little bit more in the way of, you know, sort of downfield potential. We didn't see a ton of it from him at Iowa State, but when he did get chances, he did have some good, you know, contested catches, showing off some catch radius. He had a good, really good one-handed catch that shows up in all of his highlight reels. But on film, you could definitely see that, you know, he has that upside to be more than just a check down option. So I think both players will be involved in the passing game. There are a lot of mouths to feed. That is a question mark in terms of getting that receiving upside up, because there's the three wide receivers we mentioned. Then there's two starting level tight ends that they added to this offense who also have to get their targets. So the concern is that there are a lot of players to compete against for these targets, but the positive side is that both players definitely have shown the potential to be very good after the catch playmakers, thus making them the type of running backs that quarterbacks will be very happy to dump the ball off to, because they're confident that they could get good results out of just taking that safe play with Carter or Breece Hall. So I do expect both of them to have an impact in the passing game. But I think a big, you know, overlooked X factor in terms of this part of both of their games is the pass blocking aspect, because I think the guy who sort of emerges in that area is going to get more third down reps, and thus they're going to get more targets, more catches. So Carter had some struggles in his rookie season in that area, and he's a smaller framed guy, so not the best body for taking on big linebackers who are blitzing, whereas Hall offers a lot more size and projects better in that area. So if that's how it plays out, then I could see Hall getting that edge in terms of third down reps, and that ultimately being what gives him the edge in overall touches. I think that's how it could play out. I think first, second down, you could see some rotation, maybe an even split, but I think third down could be where Hall sort of takes the edge over Carter in terms of touches. But yeah, I think both will contribute in the passing game, but we'll have to see to what extent, considering how many targets the Jets have to feed.
Oh, fantastic. You mentioned the tight ends, and this, again, in this offense, the tight end is a very important part. You mentioned two starting level tight ends. Who could possibly emerge as being somebody that can be kind of fantasy relevant because tight ends are always seem to be necessary. You know, there's always that big, you know, three, that big five. And then there's everybody else that we're hoping and we're praying. We're saying, por favor, if you could tell me about this group.
Yeah. I mean, so they signed Tyler Conklin and CJ Uzama after having very little production at this position for a long time. And it was interesting because they bring in Mike LaFleur and this 49ers coaching staff, a lot of assistants, and they want to run this offense. And we know tight end is integral to this scheme. George Kittle has shown it. It's been a big part over there, not just him, but also the, you know, two, three guys they've had in terms of blocking and stuff. But they didn't emphasize it last year, and they went into the year with a weak group, and it hurt them quite a bit. So they make up for that this offseason with two big signings. And, you know, last year, fantasy-wise, both Conklin and Uzama were, you know, they weren't huge players, but they were top 15 kind of guys in terms of receiving yards, receptions, and their overall production. But that was as the number one tight end for their respective teams. So now that they're sharing an offense and they're on a team that, again, like we've mentioned, has three solid receivers, two solid running backs, a lot of guys to feed, it will definitely be tough, I think, for them to kind of match the numbers that they each individually put up last year. I think it's probably more likely that maybe they combine to exceed their respective individual numbers. But I do think that someone's going to emerge as the clear favorite between these two guys in terms of targets. I think they'll both get snaps, and their blocking contributions are going to be huge, and that'll help the run game. But in terms of targets, I think there's a decent chance that someone kind of takes the edge. And the reason I go with Conklin is because I think he's the better route runner compared to Uzama. And I think when you're talking from a fantasy perspective and both in terms of a team, you know, real football perspective, I think route running is the biggest key to receiving production, because I think that's how you create opportunities for yourself. And, you know, a lot of opportunities are opportunistic, whether it's just a blown coverage or design plays or, you know, just running against zone coverage and you just happen to be open. But the biggest difference between the guys who can get big target volume and the guys who don't is route running, because guys who can run routes well are going to create opportunities in man-to-man situations, in improvised situations, and give themselves the chance to get more passes thrown their way because they get open, versus players who aren't quite as good as that. And when you look at Conklin's film, and also, you know, sort of his separation stats, whether it's, you know, his average separation, and his targets per route and things like that, he definitely stands out as one of the better route running tight ends. And I think it's going to make him a favorite target of Zach Wilson, because he's going to have these big play weapons. He's going to have Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, Corey Davis, and then even the running backs like we talked about. So I think his safety blanket, the guy who he can hit on a 7-yard slant to pick up a 2nd and 5, or just a short pass into the flat, or a little curl route, or a short dig against a linebacker, these short to intermediate passes in key situations, I think Conklin's going to be that guy. Uzama, on the other hand, I think probably is the higher ceiling, which we saw last year. He had some really big games, especially against the Ravens early in the year. He has more upside after the catch. He's and in the red zone, I think we haven't quite seen him fulfill that potential yet with the Bengals, but Uzama has the bigger frame. He's faster with the ball in his hands, more elusive with the ball in his hands. I think we've seen him have more deep production. So I think those abilities give him the higher ceiling. I think he'll have the bigger, I think his best games might be better than than Conklin's best games, but I think the consistency on a week-to-week basis has to go to Tyler Conklin because of his reliability as a route runner. And I think his hands are a little bit better in terms of drops. So I think Conklin is going to be the more consistent player. But it's just like running back and just like receiver, we still don't exactly know how these targets and how these snaps are going to be divided. So we still have to wait and see, you know, how it looks in the preseason, how it looks at training camp, and then ultimately how it comes out and looks in weeks one through four, I think is going to give us a good idea. So we don't know exactly yet how the Jets are planning to distribute these guys. In terms of these two, their contracts are similar. I think Uzama is getting about a million per year more than Conklin. So he did get the edge, but it's a small one. So we'll see how it plays out. But just looking at the skill sets, I think Conklin is more likely to emerge as the number one tight end, in my personal opinion. But there are definitely a lot of targets to go around. So I do think the ceiling is fairly limited for both guys, but the potential is there, depending on how things play out.
Oh, thank you. That's an awesome breakdown on, and actually it really seems like during those 4 weeks, these two might go undrafted in a lot of 12 team leagues. And maybe with one coming up, they could become a fantasy viable player, and we can definitely see that. But I'm going to make sure when I do a write up on this that Conklin is we should have him just a little bit higher. So this is awesome. Two kind of non fantasy football related, but I think they're still important in how they impact fantasy football. The offensive line, I think honestly, after the Bengals, the Jets offensive line has probably gotten more attention during this offseason. I mean, definitely one of the ones that's gotten the most, so much attention. There's been so much talk about the interior, the guards, the center taking a step forward in talent level, the tackles themselves. Can this become a cohesive unit to really just put the wall in front of Zach Wilson and make sure, get the running game going too?
Yeah, I think the O-line is a huge part of the fantasy outlook for the Jets and their, real life outlook in terms of how the team's going to try and win games, because it's a unit that since their current general manager, Joe Douglas, came in in 2019, but 2020 was his first offseason. It's the unit he's focused on the most, more than anything. Two first round picks and three fairly high priced veteran free agent acquisitions, with this culminating this offseason with Lake and Tomlinson to complete this 5-man unit of premium investments made by this current general manager. So they've invested a lot into it. It's got a lot of potential with Mekhi Becton and Elijah Vera Tucker, their two first round picks, them having shown potential. George Fant had a big season last year. Lakin Tomlinson's a reigning Pro Bowler. And at center, they have Connor McGovern, who's a solid, at least middle-of-the-pack player. And I think the clear strength of this offensive line is the run blocking, and specifically their zone blocking, which is they're all good fits for this zone scheme, which requires athleticism, lateral movement skills. All these guys have it and have shown that they can play well in this scheme. So the run blocking potential is through the roof. This legitimately can be more so than any other unit on this roster. The Jets have legitimate top end potential with this offensive line, and specifically the run game. And that, like I talked about with Breece Hall and his ability to, however many touches he gets and maximize it per play. I think whoever is getting touches back there is going to have the opportunity to do that because of the run blocking that they're going to get. And I think with a guy like Breece Hall, when the plays are getting blocked up well, and you're consistently getting a guy with his size, his speed, his elusiveness to the second level, he's going to have so many opportunities to turn those, to get 5 yards just blocked up for him and then turn that into 15 or potentially even more than that. So I think good blocking is more impactful with better running backs because, when you have a bad offensive line, it's hard for anybody to make up for it, no matter how good you are, if you're just getting hit behind the line of scrimmage. But where running backs really separate themselves is when they get in space and they have to beat defenders and shake tackles and use their long speed. And the better your offensive line is, the more opportunities like that you're going to get, thus creating that spectrum to where you notice good running backs versus not so good ones. So I think this offensive line is going to give some great opportunities to these running backs and really emphasize how talented Carter and Hall, specifically Hall, I think, can be. So the offensive line is going to have a huge impact, specifically, I think, in the run game.
Oh, so last one on the defensive side of the ball. I like to ask the question about how the team shapes up against the run and the pass. Obviously, this was a team that I targeted a lot whenever I had a quarterback or receiver, especially the latter part of the season. Added Sauce Gardner, who has big-time potential, big-time talent, big-time personality, perfect for New York. could this be a defense that maybe people have to, maybe it gets attacked a lot early, and then maybe, especially Robert Saleh being a defensive minded guy. How does this defense shape up?
I would definitely say, because last year they were a huge running back target. I know for my running backs, I would always target the Jets and really every position, because they gave up over 500 points. Mm-hmm. They're the 32nd ranked defense. Any position was good against them, but specifically running backs. And I think that's going to continue. That has a good chance of continuing this year. I think the run defense has probably been, because the Jets have a lot of holes, it would be hard to fix everything. I think run defense is what they kind of overlooked the most. In terms of linebacker, defensive tackle, they didn't really make the additions they needed to improve the run defense. It should be a little bit better, because I think at the secondary they improved the run defense, but up front, I think you're going to see running backs having some big games against them on the ground. So I would continue to target them against running backs, and I think I would continue to target running backs against them, and I think there's a good chance that will carry through the season. The pass defense, I think, is what I'll keep an eye on as potentially maybe not being as juicy of a matchup as it was last year, because last year was a very young secondary. They had two rookie corners starting and a second-year corner in Bryce Hall. At safety, it was a revolving door because of injuries early in the season. I think they had 7 or 8 different starting safeties last year. And then their pass rush had a bunch of injuries as well, specifically Carl Lawson on the edge. So, provided they're healthy, and then considering the additions they made at corner with Sauce Gardner, also DJ Reed, who they signed from the Seahawks, who had a very good season of coverage last year, I think the pass defense has the potential to be middle of the pack this year, or potentially a little bit better. So there could be games, particularly against teams with bad offensive lines, where the Jets' pass rush can really make an impact and make it difficult for the opposing quarterback to have time. I could see quarterbacks or wide receivers who play with bad offensive lines maybe not being a great matchup against the Jets this year. So that has the potential to play out. But I do think you should continue to play your running backs against the Jets this year. They're very likely to have some struggle stopping the run this year because they're an aggressive defense. They attack upfield. And they're not as gap disciplined as some other defenses. It's all about penetration and getting off the ball. So last year we saw that creates running lanes for specifically teams that play like man blocking schemes that like to pull a lot that can exploit this type of defense. So like the Patriots beat them up on the ground. I think the Ravens week 1 is a very enticing matchup.
Ooh, yeah.
That run game against this run defense. So Jets run defense, I would continue to try and exploit that. But the pass defense, I think, could be potentially not quite as enticing as it was last year.
Oh, awesome. Michael, Miguel, gracias. This was fantastic. You even went further than with Joe, so I appreciate it. So I love to close out with a Mexican food question. So this being the Familia FFP podcast, we definitely lean into Latino culture. I always love to ask our first time guests, what are your favorite types of tacos?
Well, I'm pretty simple whenever I go for tacos. I don't really do anything too extravagant. I kind of stick to the basics. Usually like a beef taco, I'll throw some lettuce and some cheese and sour cream on it. And that's kind of the extent of it. Usually I'm also sort of a nachos guy. So, I never go too overboard with ingredients. I kind of like to keep it simple and, stick to what makes it great in the first place.
Oh man. Hey, you know what? Love it. I would recommend next time you go for tacos, leave the cheese and the sour cream off to the side, get some salsa on it, get some good salsa, some cilantro and some onion on it. And just don't go crazy. If you don't like a lot of heat, just kind of go mild to medium. I think you're going to enjoy the taste of the beef, the carne asada that way. I just really recommend try it that way. And I'd love to hear what you think. So, yeah. And nachos, you just reminded me, one of the recent guests is from down the Carolinas, and he told me about nachos with Carolina barbecue on top. So that's phenomenal. That's just incredible. Oh man, Michael, Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for, I know we had some technical difficulties. Thank you for soldiering through on that. Please point any and everybody to where they can find your content and what you got coming up.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Michael_Nania. You can check out all of my writing at jetsxfactor.com. I have my own podcast at the Cool Your Jets podcast with my great co-host Ben Blessington, where we have a lot of discussions just like the one we had today. Just, you know, analytics-based, film-based, just really breaking down the Jets in that sort of in-depth fashion. And that's what all of our website content is like as well, both with my writing and all of the writers we have. I think all of our guys kind of focus on, you know, breaking down this team in a just going beyond the surface level, whether it's with film or numbers. We combine both, the best of both worlds, to really give a complete picture of everything that's going on with this team. So even if you're not a Jets fan, you're just trying to learn more about the team. And from a fantasy perspective, like we were today, I think it is a great place to go to just kind of see exactly what's going on with this team beyond, you know, the more simple aspects of it, and just, you know, going deep into everything there is to offer, learning about what's happening with this team.
Awesome. Yeah. And I just tell you, this being a team that's so full of intrigue, I can't wait to see what you're gonna give us through training camp. So Familia, please make sure you keep an eye on his work. I mean, oh man, he really brought it today, and this is what you're gonna get when you get his content. So thank you otra vez, and Familia, one more time, closing up shop. Go to fantasypoints.com, put in the Familia 22 promo code, and make sure to get 10% off. And when you go to familiaffb.com, I'll be putting out content, putting out articles on there. We got all our interviews will be archived on there, like this one. And just keep following this NFL Insider Series. We're getting great analysis, intel. We're getting that inside scoop that you need to help you out to win your fantasy league. So make sure you're following me at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter. Make sure you're going to Familia FFB at Facebook and Instagram. So otra vez, to our invitado de lujo, Michael Nania, muchas gracias. And as we would say in Spanish, esto fue un gran placer. And to you, everybody watching, muchas gracias. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.